Okay, good morning, everybody. Welcome back to our Shomer Shalosh and Class Learning. I hope everyone had a meaningful Shabbos and an uplifting weekend. We'll begin, please, with the Tefillah Al Hadibur. Ribono sha'olam, yihi ratzon mefanecha al racham v'chanin shetezakeni hayim u'mechol yom lishmor pi u'lashonim yilashon hara v'chilus v'azahar m'ledaber, afilu al ish yachid. כל שכן הכלל ישראל או חלק מהם וכל שכן לישראל מהמידוסף של הקדוש ברוך הוא. ועזר מלדבר דברי שקר חנוף המחלוקס, כעס, גאיבה, אונס, דברים, הבנס, פנים ליצונוס, וכל דיבר עשר וזקני שלא לדבר, כי אם דבר הצריך, לענייני גופי ונפשי, יהיו כל מעשיי ודיבוריי לשם שמיים, אמן. We're learning Lezecha Nishmaso and the Yilui Nishmaso, Tzvi Gershon Ben Yoel V'chana, Alav Hashal, may his neshama have a continuous aliyah and the schus of the Torah that we will share this morning. Also, we are learning for aliyah neshama for Zev Wolf Ben Yeshaya, may his neshama have an aliyah and the schus of the Torah that we are learning this morning. And with Elisha's gracious permission for continued Besoros Tovus and Refuos for Bracha V'gaya Basrachel Gita, Socha Archele Yisrael. So, we are going to learn today about two of the topics that we just spoke about in the Tefillah Al Hadibur. One of them is Mechlokes, and one of them obviously is Lashon Hara. As related to Inyani Diyom, I just want to share something really interesting with you, a practical application of why Chazal are so wise in their teaching of the Halachos and how careful we have to be. All details have been changed. All details have been changed. So it was just over the weekend that my husband and I were speaking to a third party, an in-person conversation. It was the most innocent, totally conversation. We were talking about an object that people use. So let's say we're talking about sneakers, okay? All details haven't changed. So we were talking about different kinds of sneakers that are worn by people. And I mentioned that so-and-so wears those kind of sneakers. And all three people in the conversation know so-and-so. And it was my husband and I in another party. And I said that so-and-so wears these sneakers. And the third party said something derogatory about someone in so-and-so's family. You know how we've learned that you're not even supposed to say an innocent or complimentary comment about somebody because it could lead to Lashon Hara. It was like totally out of left field. It was a topic about objects that people use. Let's say it was sneakers. And all I said is that this person, who the three of us all know, uses these and these kind of sneakers. And the other person said something negative about another member of so-and-so's family. Completely nothing to do with the conversation. So in Chazal's house, you have to be careful not even to say something neutral, complimentary about someone, because it could cause someone else to speak Lashon Hara. So Taka, in their wisdom, they know what they're talking about. And that is a very practical application of an instance of literally just happened. So we have to try and keep learning, and we have to try and keep applying, and we have to realize that Chazal see from the beginning to the end of the time, and their wisdom encompasses all situations, and they know human nature and what will happen if we are not careful with Shmiras HaLashon. So today's class centers on two parshios, the parshios that we are sandwiched between. Last week was Parsha Shlach, and this coming week's parsha is Korach. So the shiur that I prepared is related to the topic of this class, which is Shmiras HaLashon. We daven in the Tefillah Al Dibur for Inyanei Shmiras HaLashon, Lashon Hara, and not to be embroiled in Machlokas. Vezarim ledaber divrei sheker chanufa machlokas ka'as gaiva onas dvarim habanas panim leitzaris. All sins that Korach was over, all of them. So the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos, kol machlokas shehi l'shem shemayim, Pirkei, kol machlokas shehi l'shem shemayim, sofa l'izkayim, she'en l'shem shemayim, ein sofa l'izkayim, any machlokas that is for the sake of heaven, and the end it will endure, any machlokas that is not for the sake of heaven, it will not endure, which is a machlokas, ezhi machlokas shehi l'shem shemayim, as an example of machlokas that is for the sake of heaven, Hillel and Shammai. Their machlokas has endured. They are, both sides are still argued upon and discussed today and about Batei Midrashos around the world. As a machlokas that is not L'shem Shammai, that is a machlokas of Korach and his Eda. This week's parasha, he quarreled, if you will, against the appointment of Moshe as the king and Aaron as the Kohen Gadol and El Tzafan as the Nasi. And what about me? I'm just a Levi. The ground opened up and swallowed him. We got 250 men to join him, etc. I'm going to begin with a little bit of a humorous story as told over by Rabbi Mordechai Kamenetsky in his Parsha Parables. Then we will move to Rabbi Fran, Rabbi Yisachar Fran, and then we will move to Rav Shimon Schwab, Ezra Hashem. So Rav Rabbi Mordechai Kamenetsky points out a well-known part on the Mishnah that we just quoted. The Mishnah says the machlokas is l'shem shemayim, is two parties, Hillel v'Shamai. Hillel has their opinion, Shamai has their opinion, okay? How do you dance before a kala? Shamai says kala kamoshehi. Hillel says kala na v'chasuda. How do you light the candles of Hanukkah? Hillel says you go from 1 to 8. Shammai says you go from 8 to 1. So they each have their own opinion. Machloka she'enu l'shem Shammai, which just says Korach v'chol adoso, Korach and his assembly. There's no other side. What's the other side? Why shouldn't it say Korach against Moshe and Aaron? By the l'shem Shammai, it says Hillel and Shammai. By the machlokas of Korach, it just says Korach and his Ida. There's no other side. So Mordechai Kamenetsky asks that question. It's a very famous question. And he, in his Parsha parable, he tells the following story. The week following Passover, 1985, I began serving my first pulpit in a small old shul in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. The scent of herring juice permeated the building. The benches did not merely creak as the daveners swayed, they cracked. As old as the furniture was, the membership was even older. But the congregation's spirited tradition was feistier than its physical appearance. During my first week there, I was asked to bless the new month of Iyar, Shabbos Mevarcha B'Chodesh Iyar. Then the trouble began. Every Shabbos Av HaRachamim, it's right before Ashrei, between Shachos and Masuf, Av HaRachamim, a somber prayer which memorializes the Jewish martyrs during the Crusader period, is recited. However, on holidays and other festive occasions, such as Shabbos Mevarchim, Av HaRachamim is omitted in deference to the spirit of the celebration of the day. However, since the month of Iyar is the time of Sfiras HaOmer and the 24,000 students of Rabbi Akiva died, many congregations recite Av HaRachamim even during Shabbos Mevarchim. So Rabbi Mordechai Kamenetsky says, I assume my new congregation did the same. I began reciting Av HaRachamim. Immediately, I heard a shout and an uproar began. We don't say Av HaRachamim today, announced the president. We just blessed the new month. We do say it this month, yelled back the vice president. It's the Sfira period, a time of mourning. You know nothing, exclaimed the treasurer. We never ever say it when we bench Rosh Chodesh. We always do, says the Gabbai, when it's Sfira Se'omer. After the argument brewed for 5 minutes, they all began to smile, and they instructed me to say the prayer as I had planned. Before I continued the service, I sauntered over to the old shamash, who was sitting quietly throughout the tumult, and I said to him, what is the minhag of this shul? He pointed to the former combatants, and he beamed and smiled, and he said, this shul is 100 years old. This is our minhag. The Mishnah, says Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky, gives us a litmus test. How does one know when there is validity to an argument? When it is an argument that envelops eternity. Shammai and Hillel's arguments continue in the classrooms of yeshivos and synagogues across the world. Each sage's view was not for his own personal gain. It was for the sake of heaven. However, Korach's battle with Moshe was based on personal gain. Moshe had no issue. The battle of Korach and his cohorts was motivated by one thing, their own personal self. And so it did not last. A battle with divine intent, the Shem Shemayim will remain eternal. In a healthy environment, there's room for healthy differences, and it is those differences that wax eternal. So obviously it's a humorous story. What is your minhag? Our minhag is to have machlokas. Rabbi Yaakov Bender who tells it over in his Rabbi Yaakov Bender and Chumash. They asked Rav Mordechai Kamenetsky, what's the proper minhag for the two fathers to walk the chas into the aisle and two mothers to walk the kala, or for the parents to walk their son and the parents to walk their daughter? So he said, I'll tell you, by my three of my children, we did it one way, and three of my children, we did it the other way. Three children was the two fathers, two mothers, three children, it was the parents. So they said, so what's your minhag? He says, my minhag is whatever the mechotunim wanted. So we didn't have mechokas when it came to the chasana. So Korach was embroiled in a mechokas. It was one-sided. Now I go to Rav Yisachar Friend, and I actually came across this piece by Rabbi Fram when I was preparing for a different shir, and I reserved it for this morning's class. Why? Because Rav Friend here quotes extensively from the Chofetz Chaim in regard to the mechokas of Korach. One of the things that we dive into Ribbono Shel Olam for is that we should not become embroiled in machlokas. All sins of speech, ultimately, all rivers lead to the sea. All sins of speech will lead to machlokas. So, Rabbi Yisachar Fran writes, Rabbi Fran on the Parsha, Korach was considered one of the Gedolei Hador. He was the greatest of his generation, but when he chose to quarrel with Moshe Rabbeinu, he met his downfall. Furthermore, he brought down his entire family. Even his family, the tent, the wives, the children were brought down. They were swallowed up. They were destroyed, even little children. The Chofetz Chaim, in his Shar HaZechira, the Gate of Remembrance, a work that identifies the worst sins, spends several chapters discussing the sin of Machlokas. So the Chofetz Chaim, in his Sefer, in his work, Shar HaZechira, spends several chapters discussing the sin of Machlokas. This sin, writes the Chofetz Chaim, quote, is one of the most destructive, both in the havoc it wreaks in people's lives and in the spiritual damage it causes to the soul. So Machlokas will remove us from a content and satisfactory Olam Hazah. And Rachmana Litzlan, it damages our soul, which will affect our Olam Haba. Again, the Chofetz Chaim writes, Machlokas is one of the most destructive sins, both in terms of the havoc it wreaks in people's lives and the spiritual damage it causes to one's soul. Furthermore, points out the Chofetz Chaim, Machlokas is particularly harmful to children. As the Medrash notes, the court punishes a person, the court down here, based in Shamata, punishes a person when he or she reaches legal adulthood. The heavenly court punishes past adolescents, at least 20 years old. But in the Korach rebellion, because of Machlokas, even infants were swallowed up by the earth. And the Chofetz Chaim points out how therefore Machlokas is so harmful to children, not only to the people embroiled in the Machlokas, but to their offspring as well. A number of sins are associated with Machlokas: slander, lashon hara, jealousy, kinna, hatred, sinna, causing public humiliation, halbanis panim, and leitzanus. We know that Rashi tells us the whole night Korach was going around to the tents of all the Jews and making fun of Moshe and making fun of the mitzvos. He mocked mezuzah, he mocked tzitzis, he was going around and he was a scoffer. The whole night he was mocking. So here by Fran writes, quoting the Chofetz Chaim, a number of sins are associated with Machlokas, including slander, lashon hara, jealousy, kinna, hatred, sinna, causing public humiliation, habanas panim. But the core evil of Machlokas is the obsessive need to be victorious. The quarrel may begin over a genuine issue, but before long it flares out of control, he writes, and takes a life of its own. The original issue becomes less important. Winning, I want to be right, I'm right, winning becomes the most important. And he, Rachmana Litzlan, brings an example of something that unfortunately really does happen. Brothers may get into an argument over a few thousand dollars of inheritance. The quarrel begins with money, says Rabbi Fran, which is moderately significant. But once it gets started, it leads to all sorts of other poisonous directions. The brothers stop going to each other's smachot. They stop talking to each other. They burn with hatred and resentment. What are they fighting over? A few thousand dollars? What does David HaMelech tell us? Al tira ki asher ish ki yerbek kvod veso. Ki lo bimaso yikach hakol lo yerad acharav kvodo. That's all not coming with us anyway. Everything that we're fighting over, when it comes to me, it's not coming anyway. It's not eternity. It's nothing. It's fleeting. Here today, gone tomorrow. But it becomes, says Rabbi Fran, a personality conflict. It becomes an ego thing. I will not let that person win over me. I will show him who is right. It's no longer the money, it's the principle of the matter. Rabbi Fran writes, oh-ho, A-O-H-O, exclamation mark. Aha! Once you hear the principle of the matter, you know things have gone from bad with Machlokas to horrendous. Comments the Chofetz Chaim. Remember, Rabbi Fran's piece here is based on the Chofetz Chaim in the Shar HaZechira. Look how insane is this thing called Machlokas. That's a quote. Look how insane is this thing called Machlokas, comments the Chofetz Chaim. Ask any parent if he would allow someone to harm their child. Of course not. Ask any parent if he himself would harm his own child. Of course not. Preposterous. But it is proven that Machlokas will harm one's children. So how can people play this dangerous game? We have to ask ourselves, and yet they do. And in the Sefer Bavavi Mishkan Evne, building a sanctuary in the Har, which I'm teaching in Shari for about 7 years now, once a week, Baruch Hashem. So one, we learn a lot in that class, but we learn a lot in this class also, Baruch Hashem. I hope in all my classes. So One of the things that the Belvav Mishkan Avner writes, we learned a couple of years ago, a few years ago, but made such an impact on me, is that inside every person is every biblical personality. Inside every person is every biblical personality. So everyone has the anivus of Moshe, everyone has the gaiva of Korach, everyone has the ayin tova of Aaron, and everyone has the ayin ra of the meraglim. So the potential for machlokas of Korach, we shouldn't look at Korach and blame him. Rather, we should learn from him and understand what he's done to prevent that Korach from within ourselves from flaring up. It is proven that machlokas harms children, says the Chafetz Chaim. So how can people play this dangerous game? And yet they do. The need for vindication, the need for validation, for victory is so great they are blinded to the dangers. And that's exactly what Dasan and Abiram say. Im ha'enei ha'anashima eila tenaker lo na'aleh. Even if you gouge out our eyes, we're not coming up to talk to you, Moshe. We're not putting the machlokas aside. We'd rather be blinded. And when a person is embroiled in machlokas, proverbially they do become blinded. Two people in the Chafetz Chaim's town, Chafetz Chaim continues, two people in the Chafetz Chaim's town became embroiled in a machlokas. As one would expect, the situation deteriorated as time went on. It became uglier, it became messier. Then the children of the two antagonists, mysteriously, Rachman Atzan, began to die. The Chafetz Chaim decided enough was enough. He went to one of the parties and he said, "Don't you think it's time to stop? This machlokas is killing your children. Think about the children." An evil gleam appeared in the man's eye. He leaned forward and he said, "Rabbi, I will bury all of them, but I am going to win." I'm merely quoting from a friend who is quoting from the Chafetz Chaim. A famous American sports figure once said, "Winning isn't everything. Winning is the only thing." Says Rabbi Fran, this is not the Torah way. This is a pagan way. The story of Korach teaches us how far we can descend once we embark on the road of Machlokas. We must avoid, therefore, taking even the first step. And I'm going to put something in the chat that I know we've said in this class before, but it's always when we talk about this idea, it's powerful reminder of the power of Lashon HaKodesh. So I'm going to put in the chat. Okay, I'm just waiting for my Hebrew keyboard to come up here. Okay. If you look at the word machlokas, which I just put on the chat. So I always talk about the beauty and the profundity of Lashon HaKodesh, the connection between Shorashim. The letters, I just gave a share last night for the Young Israel of Hollywood, Florida. I spoke about the word Adam, how Lashon HaKodesh is full of messages and lessons and so many secrets embedded in the letters themselves. So if you look at the word machlokas, I'm sure some of you are familiar with this. If so, you're having a review. If you're not familiar with it, it's amazing. The opening, when the machlokas starts, it's a very small opening. If you look at the mem, okay, I put it on the chat. If you look at the mem, there's a very small opening because the machlokas begins obviously often with a very small nakuda. Then you move to ches. When you look at the ches, it's a little bit. Is everything okay?
Yeah.
Okay. When you look at the ches, it's a little bit of a bigger opening because now the machlokas gets a little bit bigger. When you look at the lamed, it's the tallest letter. The point goes up because now it encompasses everything that is above. It takes over, goes up, it grows higher. When you look at the kuf, it goes down because now it takes everything down with it. And that's exactly what happens with mechokas. The opening is very small and the fight's a little bit bigger. Now it grows higher, higher, higher. And now it pulls everyone down. And finally, when you come to the tav, it's so firm, it's standing on its own 2 feet. You see how the tav stands on its own 2 feet. So you even see in the name of the word mechokas how Lashon HaKodesh teaches us a whole lesson from the word of mechokas. And the Chavetz Chaim points out how horrible it is because not only does it affect the family or the people, but it will go up, it will affect the previous generation, it will go down, it will affect the children, and we have to do everything in our power not to take the first step. And now Rabbi Fran quotes the same Mishnah that we began with a little bit of a humorous vignette from Rabbi Mordechai Kamenetsky. Rabbi Fran says, the Mishnah states, Pirkei Avos, Pirkei Mishnah Yud Zayin, any argument l'shem shamayim, for the sake of heaven, will have lasting results. Any argument that is not for the sake of heaven, but for self-interest, will not have lasting results. The Mishnah goes on to give examples of two types of disputes. An argument for the sake of heaven is that of Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. They were disagreeing with each other. An argument not for the sake of heaven is Korach v'kol Adaso, Korach and his entire assembly. Many commentators are puzzled, and I quoted the question already, by the phrase Korach and his followers. The Mishnah mentions one side of the dispute. It's only in Hillel and Shammai of side A and side B. When it comes to Korach, there's only side A. Where is side B? Shouldn't the Mishnah have said, like the argument of Korach and Moshe, which is not L'shem Shemayim? Rav Shimon Schwab explains, that's all, that in an argument for the sake of heaven, both parties are interested in hearing the opinion of the other. In fact, Gemara tells us in Maseches Erevin, Yud Gimel Beis, that when Beis Hillel was reviewing and teaching, they would quote Beis Shammai's opinion first. Beis Hillel always wanted to know Beis Shammai's opinion. They were interested in hearing their opinion. Rav Schwab explains, in an argument for the sake of heaven, both parties are interested in hearing the opinion of the other. The goal is to arrive at the truth. And in order to arrive at the MS, you have to hear both sides of the argument. Afterward, they will decide which one they believe is true. And if it differs from the other school, there will be a dispute. But they are open to hearing both opinions in an argument that is not L'shem Shamayim, such as that of Korach and his followers. There is no interest in discovering the truth, the emes. Perhaps that's why the Gemara tells us that when they went down, they were saying, Moshe emes v'soras no emes. They didn't want to hear the truth in this world. So as they went to their demise, the truth was forced upon them. There was only the grab for prestige and power. They did not want to hear what the other side had to say. They turned a deaf ear to all arguments against their position. So we see that they were blind. It says that Beferesh, now we're saying they were like a deaf person, so to speak, who do not want to hear the other side. Their dispute did not have two sides. There was really only one side to dispute, and that was Korach and his followers. The Gemara tells us, continues Rabbi Fan, just as people's faces are not alike, so too their opinions are not exactly alike. That is a quote from Maseches Brachos. Rav Shlomo Eger discerns an important lesson from this teaching. So just as Ka'ein Partzufeim Domim, their faces are not alike, so too their thoughts are not alike, says Rav Shlomo Eger. No one is bothered by the differences in appearance amongst people. You don't expect all people should be identical to you. We don't walk around expecting everyone to be a clone of me. That would be bizarre. We know that the world is full of people who look totally different, and we're okay with that. We accept that people physically have differences. By the same token, teaches Rav Shlomo Eger, no one should feel everyone must share his opinions exactly. If we would be more tolerant, we would accept that others have different views, that as it should be, we would go a long way towards avoiding machlokes. So we need to accept that other Jews have differences of opinions than us, and we need to accept that there are other ways of doing things, and we need to accept that even if it's not perhaps the Torah way, we can embrace them, and hopefully that love will bring them back to the Torah way, but to becoming bread and now machlokas, like you see the word, the opening is very little, and then you move to chas, the opening is now bigger, and then you move to the lam, and whoa, now it's really high, and now it's really low. It brings, it grows so high that it takes everyone along with it, it goes so low down, it pulls us all down, and finally the Tavit standing upon its own 2 feet. So the Chavetz Chaim teaches in the Sha'ar HaZechira that the sin of machlokas is one of the most destructive, because it wreaks havoc on people's lives, and it spiritually damages the soul. And furthermore, said the Chafetz Chaim, it is particularly harmful to children. And we know the Gemara tells us right at the end of Masechta Sukkah that a child speaks, in Sukkah, the child speaks in the Shuk the way the parents speak in the home. That's what the Gemara says. The child speaks in the Shuk the way the parents speak in the home. So what the child hears in the home is what the child will go and peddle in the marketplace. If the child is constantly hearing this inyan of machokas, like the children of Korach, and Dasan and Avirim, and the 250 men, so then, Rachmana Letzan, it affects the next generation as well. So we learn from Korach that how careful we have to be. And when we say, Ve'ezaher milidaber divrei sheker chanufa machokas kas gaiva onos tvarim habanus panim leitzanus, all of those are part of the categories of machlokas. Sheker, eventually we're not interested in the emes. So sheker will prevail. Chanufa, flattery of the inappropriate parties. Machlokas, obvious. Kaas involves anger, definitely. Gaiva, everyone is interested in their own opinion and not anyone else's. Onas dvarim, verbal oppression. Rav lacham, they came to Moshe and Aaron. Maduat titnasu al kahal Hashem. Who do you think you are to pride yourself over the people of God? Habanas panim and leitzanus, they went around the whole night in the tents of the Israelites, mocking Moshe Rabbeinu and the mitzvahs, v'chol dibra asra, and ultimately it brings down one's children, Rachmana Latzlan, as well. So that is on Parshas Korach, and that is this coming week's Parsha. And last week's Parsha was Parshas Shlach. When I say last week, I mean like 2 days ago, because it's a Monday morning. So we are currently sandwiched between these two Parshios of Shlach and of Korach, and there is much relevance to our learning in this shir from both of these Parshios. So we have seen Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky and Rav Yisrachar Friend is quoting the Chavetz Chaim, and now we will move to the Mayan Beis Hashoh Eva, Rav Shimon Schwab on the Parsha. Okay, so I'm going to put on the screen for you so you could follow along with me. Okay, so now we move away from Korach and we go back to Shlach. I know I started not in chronological order. Chronological order would be to start in Shlach and then move to Korach, but I thought we would do this coming week, which is Korach, before last week, which is Shlach. Okay, very nice. Chalak to heal the rift. Bachelik also means a portion, because in Machlokas, everyone wants a portion for themselves. Oh, also, I meant to say that Korach's very name, Kar, he was called, and Karach is ice. Kar is called, when something is called, and Karach is ice. So Korach himself, when a person becomes embroiled in Machlokas, they have no warmth for anybody else. They're not interested in hearing the other viewpoints. Such a cold personality, like a kaltke, like a kerach, an iciness envelops them when they lose the natural warmth of a Jew and an Eved Hashem. So now I'm going to screen share. Where is it? I have it right here. Could you see my screen, ladies? Thank you very much. So you see on top, this is the Mayan Beis Hashoh Eva. This is Parsha Shlach. This is Rav Shimon Schwab. That's all on Parsha. So we have the Meraglim. And Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Leimer. It's the pasuk that he quotes. It's Perek Gimel Pasuk Aleph. Shlach Lecha Anashim V'Asuras Eretz Kanan. Asher Ani Nosam Levnei Yisrael. Yishachad Yishachad Amatei Avosav Tishlichu Osam. Okay. So God spoke to Moshe and he said, send for yourself men and they should scout out, they should tour out, they should spy out the land of Canaan. Rashi tells us very famously, it's the first Rashi to Parsha Shlach. Lama Nismecha Parshas Meraglim and Parshas Miriam. Why was Parshas Meraglim put right after Parshas Miriam? So the sin of Miriam was in Baal Oscha, Perikid base, excuse me, and Parsha Shlach, Perikid Gimel, begins immediately the sin of the spice. So why are these two topics together? We know nothing in the Torah is an accident. When two stories are juxtaposed one after another, means there's a connection. So Rashi asks, Lama Nismecha Parshas Meraglim, the Parshas Miriam. Why was the story of the Meraglim put right by the story of Miriam, or after the story of Miriam? Lafisha Loksal Iske Diba Shadibra Ba'achir Rishayim Halal Ra Velo Dachum Misra Ad Kanomar. This is Rashi's Lashon. Why, famous Rashi? Why were the story of the spies follows immediately after the sin of Miriam? She was stricken over slanderous speech, over business of her speech. She spoke negatively about her brother, she spoke lashon hara, and these wicked ones, meaning the spies, they saw, and they did not take Musa. Ad kan lomar, this is the language of Rashi. Okay? Ad kan lashono. Until here is the language of Rashi. So, now Rav Schwab asks an interesting question. So we always take this Rashi according to the Pashup Shah. Miriam spoke Lashon Hara, the spies spoke Lashon Hara, they saw that she got aroused and she was punished outside the camp. They should have taken Musa. But Rav Schwab says that really the question on Rashi goes much deeper. What exactly is Rashi teaching us? Umashma midvarav, and it might seem, you learn out from the words of Rashi, she'ikar hatuvia al hamiragim, the main claim against the miragim, ha'isameach mashalodachu musar mimasamir, main claim against the miragim, is that they did not take Musar, chastisement, lessons from the story of Miriam, below Shalom Nisharim, Israel Lashon Hara. It seems to be that the main claim against them is not that they were not on guard from not speaking Lashon Hara. Rather, they just didn't take Musar from Miriam. Below Shalom Nisharu, a double no. Velo shalo, and not that they did not be careful from the Isra of Lashon Hara Klali, Chahayim Musharim Ve'omdimbo, after Maisa Miriam. I don't understand, says Rav Schwab. Even before the incident of Miriam, I'm sorry. Excuse me. Even before the incident of Miriam, you have a prohibition against speaking Lashon Hara, a general prohibition against speaking Lashon Hara, whether Miriam did her sin or not. So what exactly was the sin of the Meraglim? Was the whole sin of Lashon Hara? Or is what it that they didn't take Musar from Maisa Miriam? So what is the answer here? Umuchach mizah shahaya ezeh chidush ledina b'yisur de Lashon Hara shayu lochim shayu lecholim lomod mi Maisa Miriam shalau hayu yodim mikodem akana. We learn from here, but there must be some sort of chiddush in the laws of Lashon Hara that they could have learned from Miriam that they did not know before this. Because they didn't learn this specific nakuda, so Rav Schwab says it can't just be stam. Miriam spoke Lashon Hara. They spoke Lashon Hara. They should have learned from her. They already knew they weren't allowed to talk Lashon Hara. We had Parshas Kedoshim and those say they chachil b'mech a little while ago. We know you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara. That can't be what they learned from Miriam. It can't be that they learned from Miriam not to talk Lashon Hara. That's not a chiddush. They knew about that. So what does it mean? Rishaim halal ra'u v'lo lachum musar. They saw what these wicked ones are happening to Miriam. They didn't take musar. They saw what she did. What does that mean? It didn't take musar. What should they have learned? It has to be some sort of chiddush. And they didn't learn it, and therefore they were punished. It's not just stam, don't talk Lashon Hara. We all know not to talk Lashon Hara. The Torah told us that in Parshas Kedoshim, not to talk Lashon Hara. It's in Vayikra, and we are now in Bamimbra. So what's going on here? We need to understand what chiddush, what new point in the laws of Lashon Hara they should have learned. So what were they missing? And what could Miriam teach them? And what does this all teach us? It can't just be don't talk Lashon Hara. Everyone knows you're not allowed to talk Lashon Hara. So Lashon Hara is a mitzvah that is in the realm of interpersonal relationships between me and my friend. And the ikra, the main part of the isur, the main part of the prohibition against speaking Lashon Hara is because through these words, you cause damage and insult to the person you're speaking about. Okay? So-and-so wears those kinds of sneakers. And someone else says, oh, you should see so-and-so's ex-family member. Okay? With a negative comment and a body language. So the real prohibition against Lashon Hara is because, through your words, you cause damage and insult to the person you're speaking about. Ve'im kein yotze lecha'ora, shebli hatzar v'ha'albon v'ha'hezeik, so it would seem from here that if you don't cause tsar, pain, and elbow, and insult, vehezek, and damage to the person who you're speaking about, then there's no room for shmir salashon. Okay, so let's see what Schwab just said. It's an interpersonal relationship. The main prohibition of Lashon Hara stems from the fact that we want to prevent harm and insult, injury and damage, emotional pain, and even maybe could come to physical pain, chas v'sham, to the person you're speaking about. So you could deduce from here that if my words are not going to cause any pain and insult and injury and embarrassment to the person I'm speaking about, then I don't have to have shmir salashon. That person won't care anyway. Nothing's going to happen to them, so I could say whatever I want. Now, obviously, that's not true, but that's what he proposes you might think. So, according to this far, you could say, if a person is going to speak negatively about eitzim, trees, v'avanim, and rocks, certainly, I have not done any aveira. It's not the sin of rechilos. It's not the sin of lashon hara. It's not the sin of motzi shem. I'm just talking about stones and sticks. Who cares? By the way, funny, I also came across this Rav Schwab last week and I was preparing a different shir. So Rav Fran, I was preparing a different shir. I opened the sefer. Rav Schwab, Mayan, Beis HaShoeva, I was preparing a different shir. It happens to be, putting that in quotes, Hashem led me to read these Var L'chover, and I saved both of them for this morning shir because they are, of course, for most obvious reasons, very relevant to our class this morning. So I could speak about stones and rocks. They're not Balei Hergesh. They're not people with emotion. They don't have feeling. They hits the Arab Albanam. They don't have any pain if they're ashamed. You think the rock in my garden cares if I say you're such an ugly rock? Who cares? My son told me an interesting, 1 second lesson. I want to get a piece of paper. 1 second. Sorry, 1 second. I'm back. Sorry, obviously if I had thought in advance to say this, I would have had the paper prepared, but I didn't. So my son a couple of weeks ago told me an interesting lesson. Someone sent him a little video clip. So you start with a piece of paper. And my son says to me, insult the paper. I said, well, he says, insult the paper. So I said to the paper, you're so ugly. So my son goes like this. And now he says, insult the paper again. So I said, okay, no one wants to write on you. My son goes like this. Now he says, insult the paper again. You're a terrible piece of paper. You're useless. Again, you're such an ugly piece of paper. And now my son says, apologize. But I'm sorry, paper, I insulted you. We were really doing this on my island. He was sitting there, standing there. I didn't know what he was doing. Now he says, apologize. I said, I'm really sorry, paper, that I insulted you. My son goes like this. So what's the lesson? Should be very obvious. I hope it's obvious. You can't make the paper look like it looked before. It's all crumpled. It's all wrinkled. It's all damaged. Because when you do this to a paper or a person, and then you try and apologize, you could still apologize. But the paper is always going to look like this. So who cares? You think the rock in the garden cares if I say anything negative about the rock in the garden? Such an ugly rock. A big rock, a dirty rock, moss-covered rock, who cares? So you could think that if it's not going to cause damage to the person or insult or injury, then there's no problem in speaking about negatively. There are not bale hergesh, it's there above and up. Inanimate objects are not objects of feeling that they have pain for their insult. And with this vara, the miraglim, the spies, justified their negative speech in their own eyes, and they say it's mutter. They justified their own deeds. They said it's mutter. Ba'amram, Eza, Albon, Vitsari, Agil, Eretz, Canaan. They said, what kind of damage and harm is going to come to Eretz Canaan if we tell about her negativity? Who cares? They justified their words. They say Eretz Canaan doesn't care. Ve'im kein, ein supurinu b'gnusa arts niklal, b'isra lashon hara. And so they said, talking negatively about Eretz Yisrael, it's not in the category of lashon hara. The Eretz Yisrael doesn't care. She's not going to be insulted. So now we come to the Chiddush. So therefore, Chazal say they should have learned Musar from the incident of Miriam. What does that mean? It is usur to talk about a holy object, even if that holy object won't have any, even if your words won't have any effect on the holy object, it's still usher to talk about a holy object because that holy object is divine. That's what he's going to say at the end. Shaharei miyad. So how could they have learned this from Miriam? So what happens? These Rishayim saw it happen to Miriam. They didn't take Musar. How are we supposed to understand that? The halachas of Lashon Hara and the prohibition against Lashon Hara and Mechius have nothing to do with Miriam. That's a deoraisa. Why do we have to learn it from Miriam? So what did Chazal mean? They saw what happened to Miriam. They didn't take a lesson. There has to be some chiddush here, says Rav Schwab. I'm very sorry. So what's the Chiddush? They thought that if I speak about objects, since the objects are not insulted, so therefore it's not Lashon Hara, so they justified their Lashon Hara and saying it's okay to speak negatively about Eretz Canaan because Eze Albon Vitzari, Gil Eretz Canaan, there's not going to be any insult and pain to Eretz Canaan if we speak about negatively about her. And therefore they justified their speech. So Chazal say, oh, you should have learned from Miriam. What should they have learned from Miriam? You're not allowed to speak about a Chefsa de Kedusha even if it won't be insulted. Where do we see that? Because immediately after, oh, what's Moshe's reaction? Moshe has no reaction. Moshe is so humble. He's like the rock and the stone. He doesn't care what you say about him. Oh, that's a chiddush. Just like they spoke about Moshe, and it was still a sin. Even though Moshe was a chefta de kedusha who did not care, it was still usher. But I'm telling you the Rav Schwab outside, we're going to go back to inside. That's what they should have learned. It's usher to speak about chefta de kedusha when it comes to Hilchos Lashon Hara, even if you think that object won't care. That's what they should have learned. That's the chiddush on Lashon Hara that they should have learned. So maybe it means, it's interesting, and I'll have to speak about Beis Knesset, perhaps, negatively. The Beis Knesset doesn't care. What does the Beis Knesset care if I say negative? Moshe also didn't care. You're still not allowed to do it. Eretz Canaan also didn't care. You're still not allowed to do it. Because immediately after bottom of column one, immediately after the pasuk tells you that Miriam and Aaron spoke about Moshe their brother, the Torah announces and says, Moshe was so humble. He was patient and long-suffering. He was of low spirit and long-suffering. He did not care what you say about him. He wasn't insulted. Ad kan l'shono, that's where Rashi says, v'hainu, shamechamas tichunos nafsho, lo avru al iser shal stam lashon hara, ki lo hirgish be'albono kla, mechamas rov an vasanuso. So we learn here that because of his great humility of spirit, you could say that there's no transgression of lashon hara because he did not feel any embarrassment at all, any pain at all. He did not take any umbrage at all because he was such an anav. It was like speaking about a rock or a stone or a paper. He didn't care at all. V'lagabei hatzar shahaya alu lahagi elav hayadi basam elav kemisaper bignus even okora. In terms of the pain that their words would have caused him, it was just the same as speaking about a stone or a beam. I had to look up Korah. Cave of Reshe. Beam or rafter. So it was just like they spoke about a beam or rafter. That's how Moshe felt. He didn't care. Like talking about the rock in my garden. The af al pikein. Nevertheless. Ne'anshu. They were still punished. Ki ha'even hazot. He puts even in quotes. Because this rock, meaning Moshe. Ha'isa chafsa de kedusha. It was a holy object. Va'asur l'saper b'gnuot chafsa de kedusha. Wow. And it is asur to talk, lashon hara, about a holy object, about a godly object, about a chafsa de kedusha. Shekevan sheshem shemaim alav. Because the name of heaven rests upon that chafsa de kedusha. Hare kol ha'pogeya bo u'bikvodo ki l'pogeya b'kor ba'alo yisparach. Wow, because anyone who speaks Lashon Hara about that Chafsa de Kedusha, even if that object does not care, Eretz Canaan itself doesn't care that you say, you know, the cities are very fortified and Amalek is in the south and the Canaanites live from the sea to the river and the people are burying their dead and we saw Bnei Anak in land there, so it doesn't care. And Moshe didn't care. He was like rocks and beams. He didn't care either. How do you know he didn't care? Because he has no reaction. Anam Ma'od. He was so humble. He didn't care what you say about him. So you might think, in that case, I'm allowed to speak Lashon Hara, because that object doesn't care, that person doesn't care. That's what they should have learned from Miriam. It's not that they should have learned Hilchos Lashon Hara from Miriam. They knew that already. You're not allowed to talk Lashon Hara. So what's the Musar that they did not take, these Rasha'im? The Musar is just like Miriam spoke about a Chafsa de Kedusha that was not insulted, that did not care, that did not start Machlokas, that was not embroiled in a fight. He wasn't even insulted at all. He was shafal v'savlan. He was of low spirit and long suffering. He didn't care what they said. It's still usher. She was still punished. That's the musr they should have learned. Don't go to Eretz Yisrael, which is a chafsa de kedusha, and come back and speak negatively. It's true Eretz Canaan won't care. Just like Moshe didn't care. I care, says God. What is the grave sin in speaking about a chafsa de kedusha? Shekevan sheshem shamayim alav. Hare kol ha-pogeyabo uvekvodo ki l'pogeya bekvod ba'alo yisparach v'kameitich dvarim klapei mala. Because the name of heaven, the godliness, the shechina is attached to the achavse de kedusha. Like it is to Moshe Rabbeinu. Panim al-panim adabarbeu. B'mar v'lo b'chidus lo kein avdi Moshe b'chol beisi namanu. Just like it is upon Eretz Yisrael, and he quotes right at the end. Eretz Asher Hashem Elkecha Doreisho Satamid Einei Hashem Elkecha Bami Reishis Tashana Vad Achrishan. He paraphrases that pasuk. It's from Devarim Perik Yud Aleph, I believe, pasuk Yud Beis. Devarim Yud Aleph Yud Beis. Just want to make sure I'm quoting it correctly. That's how he ends the piece. He says that the eyes of God are always upon Eretz Yisrael, just like the eyes and the mouth of God is always with Moshe Rabbeinu. Yes, it's Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Beis, and Devarim. So you cannot talk about a Chafsa de Kedusha that has godliness because it is, he says right here, Kemetiach Tvarim Klapei Mela, like you're throwing your insult, Kaviyachol, vis-a-vis the Rabban Hashem. If you insult Moshe Rabbeinu, you're insulting, so to speak, God. If you insult Eretz Yisrael, you're insulting God. That's the Musar that they should have learned. And it has practical application, I think, to us. Think of a base Knesset, a Mikdash Ma'a, where the Rabban Hashem Shechina dwells. So It's a holy place. It's a godly place. It's a chafsa de kedusha, and we have to be very careful what we say. Bezohi hatochacha sha'amar kosh baruch hu lemirim va'aron. And that is the rebuke that kosh baruch hu gave Miriam and Aaron when he said, "Shimunu dvarai, listen to my words. My servant Moshe is the most trustworthy in all my house. Mouth to mouth, I speak to him, and he sees an image of God. Harei lachem goda madregas Moshe Rabbeinu. You have the greatness of the level of Moshe Rabbeinu in the nevuah. Umadulo yireisim." How could you not have been afraid? It doesn't say Madula Yurasim the Daber Bimosha. Ba'avdi Moshe, he's my servant. He's doing shlichus of Hashem. He is godly because I am with him. How could you not have been afraid to speak ba'avdi, the chafta de kedusha that is Moshe Rabbeinu? The hayal lachem livlom pichem. You should have shut your mouths. You should have made yourselves like a mute. You should have closed yourself from speaking ba'avdi, mechameshuhu avdi, because he is mine. He is my Holy One. He is my servant. And therefore, you should have closed your mouth. Today, there are people who mock the Gedolei Yisrael. They think that they know better than the Gedolim. Not anyone on the Zoom call. Mock Gedolei Yisrael. They're antiquated, they're old. If you don't think what I'm saying is true, unfortunately it is. They're not with the world. There are blogs dedicated to this. You're not allowed to make fun of the Chafsa de Kedusha, not because the Chafsa de Kedusha cares. Because God says they're mine, they're godly. That's the Musar the spy should have learned. I know we can't go through the whole last paragraph together. V'chein Eretz Yisrael hu Chafsa de Kedusha. And so too, Eretz Yisrael is a Chafsa Kedusha. And he goes on to prove here, actually quoting a pasuk from Parashas Bahar, that Eretz Yisrael is miyuchad l'Hashem. It is special to Hashem. We are strangers and residents in the land, and Eretz Yisrael is God's holy land. And therefore, the sin of the Meraglim was so great. They didn't take Musar from Miriam. Umadula Yuresim, he paraphrases, L'daber ba'artzi. Hashem says to Miriam and Aaron, Madula Yuresim L'daber ba'avdi. Here Rav Schwab paraphrases that and says, the spies should have learned, Madula Yuresim L'daber ba'artzi. Why were you afraid to speak about my land? Eretzoni Doresh Sav Mereshis Hashanavad Ach Rishan, which is a paraphrase from Devarim Yer Aleph Yer Beis. Hashem seeks out this land. Hashem seeks out a Chafsa de Kedusha. So even if there will not be insult on the receiving end, it is still usher to speak Lashon Hara. And that's what they should have learned. That's Rav Schwab's Chiddush. That's what they should have learned from Miriam. It's not just that they shouldn't speak Lashon Hara. Everyone knows you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara. They should have learned the Chiddush that if something won't care, but it's a Chafsa de Kedusha, Hashem's name is attached to that holy object or holy person, and therefore it is forbidden to speak Lashon Hara. So I'm just going to go quickly to the lesson a day. All the information. The prohibition against speaking Rechilus may apply even if the listener is already aware of the information being conveyed. So you might think, who cares? They know it already, so I could say it. No, Rechilus still applies because Rechilus includes any statement which may foster animosity. Therefore, repeating how someone maligned or acted against the listener might make the listener better aware of the details. It might remind him of the details. It will increase hatred. Moreover, if the listener had not yet given much thought to the information, repeating it will cause animosity to form. So you shouldn't think, without to repeat, all the information that everyone knows, even if it's all the information, if it will increase, going back to the beginning of the year, machlokas, if it will increase hatred, then it is forbidden to repeat it. One more. Overt and covert. As with other forms of Lashon Hara, halacha does not differentiate between rechilus that is stated explicitly or merely inferred. A statement in which names are omitted is still rechilus if the listeners will be able to deduce the identity of the people involved. So it's not okay to say, if you're going to know who I'm talking about, I'm not allowed to say it. Also, it is forbidden to communicate through body motion, sign language, or any other means. Rashi, lo seideich v'chil b'mechem, perik yates, I think pasuk tes vav, of Parshas Kedoshim, says that, quoting Uncas, it's the meal of winkers. W-I-N-K-E-R-S. Today you have a winking emoji. So you have to be very careful when you type. If you would say a statement about a person and then type a winking emoji, it could possibly be considered using body language virtually to convey negative information. It is forbidden to communicate rechiyus through body motion, sign language, or any other means. It is forbidden to make available written or recorded material if it will create hatred and animosity between the parties being spoken about. So we began talking about Machlokas and Korach. We ended talking about Shlach, the Meraglim, and Miriam. And then we ended with a number of halachos, a lot of material covered, a lot of food for thought, and a lot of things that we can practically apply, how to stay away from Machlokas. Chafsa de Kedusha is Chafsa de Kedusha, and even if it doesn't care, you are still forbidden from speaking about it, and repeating all the information is still usher if it will increase the flames of hatred and machokas. May the neshamas of Tzvi Gershon ben Yoel v'Chana Lavasham and Alyssa and Zev Wolf ben Yeshaya merit Aliyos neshamas in the schus of the Torah. We thank Alyssa and her family very much for the sponsorship. Well, wait a minute. Why didn't the Meraglim get saras like Miriam? Miriam was banished from the camp for 7 days. The Meraglim were banished from the camp of Eretz Yisrael forever. We know that their tongues grew down to their navel and worms came out of their tongues. And they were banished forever. A person can be healed from tzara'as. They were never able to be healed. Their punishment was much worse. Miriam was enclosed for 7 days with banishment. They waited for her because she waited for Moshe by the river. Moshe davened for her because Aaron was a first-degree relative and could not hear her, and she was healed. From tzaras, a person is healed. That's what Tazria Mitzvah are all about. Mitzvah is about the healing process. It begins Perek Yudalet. Tzaras would have been too lenient for them because it could have been healed. They were banished, Badad Yishev, Michutz HaMechana Moshavo, and they were never allowed into Eretz HaKodesh because of their slander of the Chafsa de Kedusha. I wish everyone a day of Besuros Tovos. Alyssa, we thank you very, very much. Tizki the Mitzvos u'lemaisim tovim. Kol tov, everybody. Thank you.